All right, so the guy goes away. Jays win a couple of games. Guy comes back. Jays lose.
Your fault.
It's all my fault. 6-5, the Chicago Cubs walked off the Blue Jays in 10 innings today. It is Blue Jays Talk with Blair and Barker. The numbers, as always, 416-870-0590. 888-666-0590, *590. And since we've hadn't had a chance to talk for a while, one of the things I want to throw out there for callers is, well, you've seen a chance now to see the guys that the Jays acquired at the trade deadline, some of them anyhow, Loper, Fido, Wagner. You've also seen Leo Jimenez. Ernie Clement, of course, has been here all year. Ditto for Davis Schneider. You got to pick two of those to play key roles next season on the Blue Jays. Which two are you picking? 416-870-0590, 888-666-0590, *590. Kevin, a lot to get to right away. Let's talk about that 10th inning. You know, the Chicago Cubs coming off a series sweep at the hand of the Cleveland Guardians, in which they had the lead in all of those games, blow a lead, a three-run lead in the ninth inning to the Blue Jays on a balk and then George Springer's triple. This is a team, a Cubs team, that I think was 3 for their last 26 with runners in scoring position. So, of course, because it's the extra inning, they get the ghost runner or the automatic runner at second base. And it's not a great lineup, but, Kevin, between Bush, Suzuki, and Bellinger, I mean, if you're the Cubs, that's the right part of the lineup you want up, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe, but it just gets back to the same thing I've been saying, and the question that I asked John Schneider, is Chad Green going to develop a split finger? How do you get a lefty out? You're going to be the guy that they're going to go to next year, especially to start the season in the ninth inning. You know, he's got to be the no-brainer, right? He ain't a pocket guy. He's going to have to come in occasionally, two lefties and a righty. The slider, for me, is just not good enough against that. And trying to always do it with an elevated fastball is very hard, right? You got something that's tunneling off the fastball because of how hard he throws and how tall he is and how hard it is for you to judge north of the strike zone against him. It's, for me, imperative for him to figure out a way to get something that's diving down off of the fastball. The slider's not going to do it. And, you know, it just sort of puts you in a spot where you have to be pinpoint commanded with the fastball. So, yeah, it's a little bit, right? The home run again bit him in the you-know-what, right? It was the three home runs, bad location from Yariel, and the little get me over. Yeah, I said it, little get me over, little sort of knuckle curve thing that he tried to throw to Hap, that when you throw it to a decent hitter in that ballpark, especially when the ball you could tell is flying a little bit to the big part, you're not going to get those back. So, yeah, I mean, it's a game of inches too. Vladdy gets that sweeper. You know, the stride foot may have been a little longer because you could tell he recognized that it was spinning. You know, he's trying to catch it out front a little bit more. He's trying to keep barrel in the zone long enough to square it up, and that's why, you know, you love baseball. It is a game of inches. He gets that closer to the label. That's a two-run homer. You know, they probably win that game. So, yeah, this just sort of, to me, you know, is what they need and just keeps hammering it home, Jeff. I mean
– yeah, well, I'm going to say – I'm going to say this, Kevin. You know, we'll talk about Yariel Rodriguez, but, you know, I'm going to say this about Chad Green. I don't think there's a world in which Chad Green is a closer for this team next year.
You don't think
so? With all due respect, I don't think there's a world in which that happens. Chad Green's a setup guy. They did not bring Chad Green in here to be the closer. He's a closer because Jordan Romano was hurt. Now, I know they've got a lot to do. I'll tell you right now. I'll guarantee you right now. Mark down the date I said this. Chad Green will not be closing for the Blue Jays.
Well, I hope you're right, because the people I've talked to that matter, that are making some decisions around that team, tend to disagree with you.
Well, so I hope they're not smart.
I hope you're well. that's a rabbit hole I'm not willing to stick my head down. So
unless he develops, if he can develop the split finger, then maybe is a chance. But I don't think there's any world in which he's the Blue Jays closer. Again, he's doing it because of Jordan Romano's injury.
How about we say it this? If they think they can contend going into the next season and get off to a hot start, he can't be the closer. How's that?
He can't be your closer. That's good. I think we're both on the same page. We're both on the same page with that. Not to say that Chad Green doesn't have a spot in this team. I absolutely believe he does. But not as a closer. So Look, Yariel Rodriguez, this is one of the things we're watching the rest of the way with this team. We want to see how the Blue Jays handle him the rest of the year. We want to see how it plays out. You mentioned three home runs given up today, back-to-back by Pete Crow Armstrong and Amaya, and then in the first inning, Cody Bellinger with a two-run shot. Same problem with Yariel Rodriguez, the inability to put somebody away with a couple of strikes. How do you go about correcting this?
Yeah, I think it's experience. Look, what I do know is he's athletic. He's got stuff. I can teach him how to throw strike one. I can teach him how to locate strike three. Like, I think that's where it's at, and that's why they continue to run him out there, and hopefully he gets the ball every 5 days to end the season, because they want him to get that experience to allow him to be able to throw strike one, right? He was 13 to 21. It's just not good enough. It needs to be somewhere in that 15, 16 times out of 21 batters, right? The strike three thing is a big deal. He gets 0-2, Jeff. Now what? Like, how do you get him out? I would love to see him throw cutters up. Throw a cutter up and into a righty. Throw a cutter up and into a lefty. Stop trying to, you know, sort of massage strike three in there. And, you know, sort of sometimes you just got to be able to drive it in there, right? And
sometimes
that's
you got to trust your stuff.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you have to trust your stuff, right?
No question. And occasionally, I just don't think he does that. He tends to nibble. Obviously, where he came from, he can get away with that.
Yeah.
At this level, he cannot
correct.
Get away with that. So I will say this. He's very, very athletic. All the things he does mechanically, repeating that, staying over the rubber, you've seen they've adjusted some arm slots. When's the last time you seen him start, stop? It's rare. He occasionally did it once or twice a day, but it's consistently now they're trying to get him in that one arm slot. So you like the stuff. They're going to teach him how to do all that other stuff.
One quick question. We're going to go to the callers in a minute. 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. The Chicago Cubs have beaten the Blue Jays 6-5. They've walked them off in the first game of this three-game series at Wrigley Field. Want to say this about Yariel Rodriguez. Want to ask you about this. Those are the first two home runs I believe he's given up to lefty hitters this year. What is it about him? Is he the type of guy that will be effective against lefties? In other words, if you're listing things that you don't necessarily worry about with Yariel Rodriguez, or if you're listing a to-do list with him, he can handle lefties? Does he have the stuff to handle lefties?
Absolutely. I just mentioned it. Cutters up. Split fingers down. Have confidence. Throw the split finger more. It's good. You can tell when it's got the good finish and it's competitive, right? Where it's I have to track that thing and I got to say, you know, strike, strike, strike. And it's putting me in an uncomfortable position to think that I have to attack that thing and make a positive move towards the baseball. Absolutely. I do think it is, right? It's just the mislocation. When you're trying to go away with the slider, you hang it down the middle. That's an easy pitch to backspin. You do that in Chicago because of the way the wind's blowing. You know, then he's trying to throw the slider away. He misses down the middle. It's that thing, right? It's the location. It's where you're trying to start it. Don't get cute. Understand you got some good stuff. Finish it. He does that because he's athletic. He's got good stuff. Pete Walker will teach him how to do all that other stuff, Jeff. They'll teach him how to throw more strike ones, and they'll figure out a pitch to get after dudes, be more efficient, have quicker action. Quicker action means instead of throwing 88 pitches in five innings, you'll throw 88 pitches in six innings, and that's a quality start. That's what they want from it.
Guy and Maple, you're on Blue Jays Talk. What's up, Guy?
Hey, guys. You were talking about which guys to keep next year. If ownership is talking about contending next year, I really think that leaves Loper Fido out of that equation. They need an outfielder who could hit the ball. I don't think I've seen enough out of him. It's too early, I think, for him. I think a number four outfield position right now for him next year is just about right, maybe. And between Horowitz, Clement, and if Wagner keeps hitting the ball like this, I mean, it's still too early. I've seen this before with Schneider. And Schneider's basically a write-off. He needs to be off this team. They need to, you know, maybe package him in a deal. And, you know, they need to get a couple of bats, like the Santanders and the Christian Walkers of the world, or somebody of that ilk. And if they get those types of guys, and they really are all in, I might be jumping the gun here, but, you know, you got your favorite trade partners out there in Oakland where you could do a one-stop shop and go after Rooker and Langeliers and Miller, give up half your farm team and just go for it. I mean, that's, to me, that's the answer. I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. The reason I like the call is I wanted to talk about the approach we saw from those guys that we're learning about from Horowitz, from Wagner, from Clement. By the way, interesting stat on the Jays. I'm just throwing this out there. I don't want anybody to make any leaps here. But Ernie Clement's defensive rating for third baseman is really good. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be your everyday third baseman next year. I don't think he is. But it just gets further to the point that Kevin's talked about how, to me, he has a very useful role in this team next year. Like he's on my team in some form next year. I have no problem if they have another third baseman who gets hurt or needs a couple of days. I have no problem with Ernie filling in there. Will Wagner, we've talked about, and you have made the cautionary note that this isn't a 22-year-old guy we're talking about. He is 26, bear that in mind. They appear to maybe have a bit of an issue here because I like him at second base. I also like Horowitz at second base. They're both left-handed, so the platoon is probably out there. The guy that I want to focus on, though, Kevin, is Loperfido, because we were talking as the game went on. You talked in the fourth inning about the approach against Kyle Hendricks, the up the middle approach we saw from everybody, that came up in that inning. Joey Loperfido comes up, grounds out 4-3, he's got two on again, and that. That was an inning where it was starting to fall apart a little bit for the Cubs. You had the couple of errors. Dansby Swanson looked like he wanted no part of the ball hit to him at any point in time. So let's talk about Joey Loperfido. I'm with Guy in this, Kevin. I'm okay with him as my fourth outfielder, but my goodness, in order to do that, you got to hit a fastball, son. Like you have to hit a fastball for me because you're probably going to be coming in the game in the eighth inning, seventh inning, eighth inning, ninth inning when I'm pinch hitting for someone. More often than not, I'm going to get a fastball.
Yeah, look, I think you got to, we don't want to get too crazy here because he is just pushing 50 at-bats with the Blue Jays. Now, the 50 at-bats have looked, a lot of the times like he is non-competitive and doesn't really have a chance when he walks to the plate, right? Just facing Kyle Hendricks, you got to think one thing when you go up there, hit it where it's pitched, and your takes have to be on point. Like, if you chase him around the strike zone, it's going to be when you're in the bus on the way back to the hotel, asking yourself, how in the heck did I just go 0-for-3 off of that guy? Because you chased him all over the strike zone. Let me ask you a question just by watching them. Can he hit it where it's pitched? Absolutely not. So
no.
I think it gets back to that Burnett's thing. When I was in the cage, when I was a Brewer, he walked by me. I was hitting balls off the tee and took a picture with his flip phone and turned it around and showed it to me and said, hey, do you look hitterish? And I was absolutely not. I looked like I was standing on my head, and I was hitting, like I'd never put a bat in my hand before. I think the tension-free approach has to be a thing, and I think they got to have a sort of an urgency to figure out better direction with his lower half. He uses too much top hand, right? He's not Altuve. He's not Tucker, right? So there's a couple of things that go with that. If I want him tension-free, I act like he's on the dance floor, dancing around, having a good time. Does he look like that when he goes to the plate? No. He goes up there and he stands, and he looks very statuesque. And right, he just looks like he can't get to his maximum bat speed. That'd be the first thing. And figure out how to get his front foot in line with his back foot. What I mean by that is you can put a bar there, you could put a bat there, and basically say, I'm going to line it up with my back foot. I want you to follow the barrel straight to where the target's coming from, right? So the pitcher's releasing the baseball, so that gives you better direction. That forces you to have better length with your barrel. What it does is gives you an opportunity to hit it where it's pitched. He can't do that right now because of where his front foot is going. He cuts himself off. He's out and around everything, which makes his swing longer, which forces him to use more top hand. Top hand is the steering wheel. I only know two people in baseball that do that. Altuve and Tucker. They're two of the best hitters on planet Earth. Loperfido, one of the best hitters on planet Earth? No. So you just got to, for me, there's got to be urgency here. You can't continue to see this. You got to see what's right in front of you. What an obvious change would be to give him a chance. And oh, by the way, you have to keep reminding him, it is baseball. Try and have fun, Does it look like he's having fun to you? Now, understanding that he has looked awful as a Blue Jay, but man alive, dude, like, have something to give him that actually matters. Stop giving him something that he's obviously not buying into, and it starts for me tension-free and better direction. Those two things as a big league offensive player are very easy tinkers. You can fix that overnight. He does that because I saw him take batting practice, Jeff. He's got tremendous power. It's just he can't tap into it consistently because of his lower half.
I also want to talk about Leo Jimenez because it seems to me that that's a guy in some ways you're kind of talking about. You watch him at the plate, and it's not always free and easy, but I mean, you certainly get the impression that, one, he's enjoying himself being up in the majors. But, two, you talk about a guy looking hitterish. He surprised me how often he does look hitterish, how good his takes are.
Well, for me, it is the tension-free of the hips through the swing. That's a big deal, right? What's the goal in 2024 is to beat the guy to the spot. Now, Kyle Hendricks is not a hard thrower, but you still got to beat that dude to the spot because of the way he changes speeds, make the heater look like it's a little harder than the actual velocity he's telling you on the scoreboard. So you got to be able to release tension. He seems like he's got an idea of how to do that. That means when the front foot hits the ground, the tension out of your hips is already gone. And now I can free and easily get my barrel to different quadrants. That ball was a good pitch that he hit out because because he releases tension of the back hip, it easily gets to that quadrant. So, yeah, you just like it. Like, it just sort of, he's got it, he picks it up, he gets rid of the tension, he throws the barrel at the baseball, and he looks to me again. I hate to say it like this, and people are going to roll their eyes because of how much money they make. Sometimes you just got to have fun. And he looks like he's having fun.
I was going to say, he looks very much to me in the field and at the plate like someone who is just completely, I wouldn't say at peace because I think that's overrating, but he looks like he's in a good place. Like, he really looks to me as if he's in a good place.
Why not? Yeah, I don't think he's trying to earn a job. That's what it looks like to me. It just looks like he is comfortable with his approach, his little leg kick he has. He's found a sweet spot with that. He can repeat that. Now it's just about, again, like I mentioned, with the tension of the hips, releasing that and having a little fun and occasionally getting you know, the barrel out in front, getting frisky and catching the balls you're supposed to catch, the short stuff. He's got good hands. He's got a strong arm. Like, he's one of the guys you're either, you can get something that you need with him because he's showing other teams that he could be in the major leagues, or he could be your fourth outfielder because of what Bo's going through. They're going to need a backup shortstop. Now, that may be Ernie Clement if Ernie Clement's not playing third. I'm in the camp that you have to go out, Jeff, and get you a top 30 total base guy and a top 40 extra base hit guy.
Yep.
I don't care where they play.
No,
once they
you.
Get here, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, I'm with you. When I look at this team, there's really only one guy in this team right now that I'm absolutely, you know, 100%. I'm not moving him off that position next year, and that's Vladdy. I mean, you're not going to be able to trade George Springer's contract. That's not my point. I'm saying, if you said to me, who in that team do you not want to replace right now? Like, Vladdy's the only guy. If I can make my lineup better, well, I'm look.
If I'm going to make a run, it's got to be with Bo playing short.
At least
to begin the season.
I'm just going to tell you, I'm assuming Bo's going to be traded. I don't think we're going to
see him. Yeah, good luck. I mean, he's not healthy. He had an awful year. He's had an awful year since August of last year. Like, that's a big enough sample size. And the thing with the right leg, I would think, because if you're a team, it's going to be a good team, and you're going to be contending if you bring Bo in. So there's some unknowns there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends. If you think you can sign Bo to a long-term contract, it doesn't have to be a good team.
I don't have to. Again, with all the things the Jays have to do, it ain't trading Bo in the offseason. I'd trade him at the trade deadline next year because he's healthy and he's having a good year.
Again, though, if you were going to have to get a couple of impactful bats in here, and I know it makes no sense to trade Bo because then you're giving away an impactful bat. But Bo's in the last year. If you can get an impactful bat that's got 3 or 4 years of control, you move Bo because you're not going to re-sign Bo. But again, the whole point is we'll throw Bo in there. Fine, throw Bo in there. If I can make my team better, there's nobody else I have to play in that lineup. You know, Varsho's great defensively, but I don't have to play him. If I can get a left-handed bat with some power that hits in the middle of the lineup and needs to play the outfield, well, we'll figure out what to do with Dalton.
Yeah, get him.
That's where I am
in,
right now.
Get him in there once they're here. Figure out where they're going to play in the
exactly.
field. Yeah.
416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. The Blue Jays have lost 6-5 to the Chicago Cubs in the first game of a 3-game series at Wrigley Field. The Jays are 57-65. They'll do it all over again tomorrow. We'll take a break and come back and hear from the skipper, John Schneider. It's Blue Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
About the fight in your team?
I thought it was great, you know, stringing together some hits, you know, that's a good closer, and, you know, the fight has been there the entire year, you know, so I thought it was a really good inning. You know, you're kind of a couple inches away from taking the lead, but love the way they went about it.
Yeah, a couple of inches is right. Vladdy just missed a two-run home run in the 10th inning, but... not to be. The Chicago Cubs have beaten the Blue Jays 6-5 in 10 innings, walking them off. Seiya Suzuki walking the Jays off with a single, scoring the automatic runner. Chad Green on the mound for the Blue Jays. The Jays were down 5-2, came back with 3 in the 9th inning on a 2-run triple by George Springer and another run scored on a balk. Now, I'm not a pitcher, but I saw the replay. I didn't see the balk. Did you?
No. That's an umpire that says you came here to see me umpire.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't. I just flat out didn't see it. So
no.
But anyhow, 6-5 the Blue Jays lose. They are 57-65. John Schneider was also asked about Yariel Rodriguez, who had the start today, and pretty much what we've seen from Yariel Rodriguez so far in his Blue Jays career. He did give up 3 home runs today. A couple of them to lefty hitters, which is something he hasn't done so far. But again, the inability to finish off a hitter with 2 strikes, something that you have to think will be addressed by Pete Walker and the Blue Jays in the offseason. But again, I'm with Barker. I mean, the athleticism is there. It's odd. I have no doubt, Kevin. And well, I'll talk to you. I have no doubt that Yariel Rodriguez is going to be better next year.
Yep.
I have no doubt he's going to be better, and he's going to be a number 3 or number 4 starter on this team. I just don't think there's any question about it. But let's hear what the manager had to say about Rodriguez's outing today.
Yariel gave up 3 homers this afternoon. What was his issue?
I think it was breaking balls in the middle of the plate. One was a fastball, I think, to Amaya, but just kind of in the middle of the plate. I thought his stuff was really good other than the mistake pitches. You know, fastball was good. Split was really good. You know, the hanging breaking ball to Bellinger in the first, and then just a couple mistake pitches. But he had really good stuff today.
John, when you look at like spring training, opening day, through the day, how do you notice the stuff holding up over the course of the season?
I think it's good. I think he's kind of getting better a little bit with, you know, getting used to pitching every 5 days. But the stuff has been, you know, velo's there, stuff is there. It's just kind of limiting, you know, a handful of pitches per outing for him. But he's done a really good job of kind of maintaining it.
Now he's getting like 6, 7, 8 weeks into a regular routine in the rotation. How do you think that's helping him in terms of that set schedule?
Yeah, I mean, it's big. You know, it's taken him a while to kind of get to this point, and I think that the other guys are helping him kind of, you know, through it, and he just knows what to expect. But I think that's all part of the learning curve this year for him.
What do you think, like down the stretch here, that next jump upside is that you're really looking to take the next level?
I think just really, I mean, just executing really. You know, you look at his outings and his stuff is usually there, and it's just a couple mistake pitches. So you can really say that about anyone. But I think kind of, you know, for him in particular, it's kind of not taking a pitch off and, you know, just remembering kind of what his stuff is capable of.
That is John Schneider talking about Yariel Rodriguez, and I think a timely reminder from John Schneider as well that, you know, this is a guy, this is not, Kevin, the normal career path for a pitcher in the major leagues. This is a guy who came over from Cuba. It's a guy who's been in Japan. He's been a starter. He's been a reliever. So regardless of how athletic you are or how good your stuff is, it's the major leagues, and you are going to have to develop a routine and figure some things out. It's not. Yeah, it doesn't come naturally to everybody.
Yeah, I think John hit the nail on the head when he said, you know, you can't teach experience is basically what he's saying there, right?
Yep.
Again, it's just in-game things, right? It's even controlling the running game, right? I mean, I think he walked Swanson, which is never a no-no guy hitting the bottom of the order who's having an awful year offensively. You never want to do that. But it's just when he's bouncing off, you see that, you pick over, it saves you some pitches to where mm-hmm. you can go deeper in games. It's just the little things, I think, that comes with that. The more times you do it at this level with the athletes that you're facing every time you go out there is the thing that he's trying to learn, right? It's the 4-2-0 counts. It's the 5-3 ball counts. It's the 13-21 first pitch strikes. It's those things that you can control that you can only know how to do it by going through it, and that's what he's doing right now.
Joe in Mississauga, you're on Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Joe.
It's great that you're taking calls again. I hate leaving messages at the back line. I just wanted to say, Kevin, you know, you were talking about what we need for next year. And I don't know, but it was exactly the same at the end of last year. And Atkins ended up bringing us Vogelbach, Turner, a whole pile of utility infielders. Kiermaier that he let go, no one wanted, so he brought him back. And he basically made it worse. And is he going to really do the job this year, or is it going to be the same old?
Thank you, Joe. I'll turn it over to you, Kevin.
This is what I know. I know what Ross said on our show. I know what Mr. Shapiro said in his availability.
Oh, it's Mr. Shapiro now, is it?
Well, I mean, it's always been that way. I've known his dad for a long time. It's respect.
Know,
he was my,
know,
he was my agent,
kidding.
So it's a family thing. Look, I think now they know that they just can't throw all their trust in the Kirks of the world and think that the core, which is two dudes, is going to take them to the promised land. It's right in front of them now. The process has played out enough that I think the process is not good enough. And now I think they know that they need to get in here more talent. Like, it's just, the talent 1-26 on the roster is quite frankly just not good enough. And I think me personally, the people that I've talked to, and just listening to those two guys who are making the decisions, sounds to me like they've come to the realization that something needs to be done and better talent needs to get in here. Now, whether they'll do it or not, they do have a big payroll, Jeff. Like, I think that's something you hang your hat on. It seems to me like ownership is still willing to pony up.
The question isn't whether or not ownership will spend to improve this team. The question is, can this front office make the moves with that money, with that payroll flexibility to improve the team? And, I mean, that's quite frankly a question that needs to be answered. And I don't want to get you all excited, but it's a Friday, and I am feeling unduly optimistic. Our friend John Heyman was on, well, optimistic, not unduly. Our friend John Heyman was on MLB Network today. You're shaking your head. Did you see what he said?
Yeah, but you see where he put the team.
Yeah, I know, but they're in that. He was asked which teams did he think had a were going to take a run at Juan Soto. And my Blue Jays were ranked fifth out of five teams.
Some would say they've been running too much.
Oh, hey, you know what? Hey, you know what? As a matter of fact, oh, my God, Sho Ali, our tremendous producer and host of this show, he has that clip. So we're going to play because it's Friday. And I know it's going to be stormy tonight, and we're going to get like 100 millimeters of rain down here apparently in the next 3 days. But let's play the clip for the folks so we can kind of leave on an up this evening. This is John Heyman talking about Juan Soto.
I mean, I'm leaning heavily on the teams that were willing to spend for Ohtani, and the Jays are certainly willing to spend. They want to win. They have the wherewithal to do it. So for me, even though they were five, they're still 25-1. I gave odds, and I still have them at 25-1. They did try for Soto in trade. They were one of those teams that did that as well. So we know they like him. They love the offense combined with Vlad and all that. So Jays are number five.
There you go. Jays are number five. We don't care about who the top four are. You could probably pick them out.
The only thing that matters is who the top two were. That's the only two that matter, Jeff.
And before you dismiss this, again, as I always remind people, when it comes to a Scott Boras client, John Heyman, his info, his leanings, his sources are all Scott Boras. So Scott, trust me, Scott Boras wants to gin up the market. The last thing, well, I mean, two teams in New York bidding for Juan Soto would be great, but four teams bidding for Juan Soto might even increase the money, might even increase the contract a little more. So it is two, and I'm not criticizing John Heyman for this. I mean, I'll put on my fishnet stockings with the best of them, you know what I'm saying? And I'll play the game for the agents. Always have. I've had no problem playing the game with the agents. But keep that in mind anyhow. But man, oh man, Juan Soto? I mean, I'm getting sweaty just thinking about Juan Soto in a Jays uniform.
I think, how dare you? How dare you do this on a Friday?
That's good.
You heard the chuckle when he said 25-1?
Come on, man.
Oh, boy. I guess miracles happen.
Juan Soto. I wonder what uniform number he'd wear for the Blue Jays. It'd be pretty good. Do you think Don Mattingly and Guillermo Martinez would try to change him? You think they'd try to change him? Maybe put some weights, get him in the batting cage with some weights on to try to hit for more power?
Bad.
Anyhow, 6-5, the Blue Jays. They have lost to the Chicago Cubs, but don't panic. They got two more games to get it right. Thank you for listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Brampton and Georgetown, Ontario. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection.